revenue.
Okay, this is some work in a paper that already appeared by Lunin and Eileen and myself, and then there will also be another paper by Eileen and myself. So, one of the things in recent years is the idea of having an emergent space-time geometry, and perhaps the simplest example of an emergent space is the following. So you start with quantum mechanics system. So we start with quantum mechanics of n by n matrices, and so let's call them phi. So these are n by n matrices, and they have a simple Lagrangian, which is just phi dot squared plus minus m squared. So the Lagrangian of a harmonic oscillator. So we start with a system with this simple Lagrangian, and then we restrict to un invariant states. So un acts by conjugation here on the left, by conjugation on this matrix, and we restrict to, from all the states of these harmonic oscillators, we restrict just to the un invariant states. And as was shown by Itzitson, Suber, Parisi, and Bresson, what you get is that using this un invariants, you can diagonalize the matrix into its eigenvalues, and then each of the eigenvalues will be a harmonic oscillator, and the effect of the diagonalization is to introduce a measure factor that makes these n particles fermions. So the ground state of the system will be given by filling in the first n states of the harmonic oscillator. So if n is very large, you are filling in many of the states here, and then you will have some Fermi C here, and the low energy excitations of the system are going to be given by small fluctuations of this Fermi C. So we started out by a system in 0 plus 1 dimensions, which are these matrices, and out of the dynamics of the system, we find that, at least at low energies, the excitations are described by a field that lives in 1 plus 1 dimensions. So we end up with a field, let's say phi. This is a bosonic field which describes the oscillations of this Fermi C, and it lives in 1 plus 1 dimensions. Okay? Of course, so the extra dimension, one of the dimensions is time. We already had it. We had it in the beginning. And the second dimension is a spatial dimension that comes out of the geometry of this Fermi C. Now we can represent the same thing by going to phase space, and so we have the position variable q and the momentum, and then the ground state is just filling, so the orbits of the system are circles here, and the ground state is filling a circular droplet in this phase space. Okay, so this is the simplest example, and one of the things I'm going to do right now is to embed the simplest example into a full ADS-CFT situation. So, where we will consider this simple, we will isolate from the field theory a piece that behaves in this way, and in order to isolate it that way, we're going to restrict to states that are 1/2 EPS. So out of all the states of the Yang-Mills theory, so here we'll have some Yang-Mills theory. Okay, so here what I'm imagining is the relationship between ADS5 cross S5 and four-dimensional n equal to 4 super Yang-Mills. So we're going to consider states that are 1/2 EPS in n equal to 4 super Yang-Mills, and we're going to see how those 1/2 EPS states are governed by this simple Lagrangian, and then are governed by this simple Lagrangian, and then we're going to study certain classes of gravity solutions here in ADS5, and we're going to see that their characteristics are determined by giving shapes of droplets in a special two-dimensional plane. One of the things perhaps I should have remarked here is that when n is large, so when we have lots and lots of fermions, this really behaves like an incompressible fluid, and this fluid description is correct as long as n is very large. So we can forget about the details. So in order to talk about the details of this surface, you really need to think about them as fermions, as a quantum mechanical system. But when you view the system from far away, so if n is very large, so this surface is very large, then the system behaves classically, and the classical description of the system is just the description of in terms of a fluid that is incompressible. Okay. So of course, in this simple Lagrangian, the evolution is simply a rotation in phase space. So you have a simple ripple here. This ripple will start rotating. Okay. Okay. So let me now go on and explain some aspects of this 1/2 EPS state. So now we're going to start on here the field theory side. And the field theory contains six scalars, phi 1 up to phi 6. We're going to be thinking of the field theory as living on R cross S3. So when you think about the action for these six scalars, the action will contain a term that will contain a mass term due to the fact that there is some curvature on the S3. Okay. So these are conformally coupled scalars, and so there is a coupling R times phi, and so you probably heard this already several times. So. Now we're going to consider all these scalars. We're going to, so we have an SO6 symmetry, and we're going to be focusing on a special generator of SO6. So the generator, let's call it J, which is the generator that makes a rotation in the 1 and 2 plane. And we're going to consider states that are charged under this J. So the supersymmetry algebra, in some of the generators contain, in the right-hand side, the energy or conformal weight. Well, in this context, it would be the energy, the operator that performs translations in this direction, minus J, but plus some other things. And so there is a constraint that E should be bigger than J, and states which have E equal to J are 1/2 EPS. Well, you can check that they are 1/2 EPS states, and they preserve 16 of the supercharges. So these states, so we can form a field C, which is this complex combination. So this field C has energy equal to 1, so this is just the mass of this Lagrangian. The mass of the harmonic oscillator, or the frequency of the harmonic oscillator, and it has also J equal to 1. Of course, C bar would have J equal to minus 1. Okay, so this is then a harmonic oscillator, and it's basically what we had over there. So that's the degree of freedom on which we are going to focus, and this is actually the only oscillator in the theory. When you take n equal to 4 Young Mills and you reduce it on R cross S3, and you so you have a system of harmonic oscillators, so you have an infinite number because you have all the closed Klein modes on S3, but this is the only oscillator mode which obeys that delta E minus J is equal to 0. Okay. All the rest have E minus J bigger than 0. Okay, so that's
a constant mode on S3.
Yeah. So this is a mode, it's constant on S3, and so all the other modes have bigger energy. So for example, if you take C bar, this has the same E, but J is minus itself, so this quantity would be equal to 2 instead of 0. Okay. Now, when we select, so we select states that obey this this condition, and the states that satisfy this condition are going to be invariant under 16 of the supercharges, under 16 Qs. And these 16 Qs obey some algebra, which in the right-hand side contain this generator, which we already mentioned. And it also contains two SO4 generators. So states are going to also be invariant under two SO4 symmetry groups, and these two SO4 symmetry groups are just the rotations on S3, and the rotations in SO6 that commute with this generator. Okay. So in the end, the full bosonic symmetry is composed of these three generators, where this generator is the non-compact generator generated by E minus J. Okay. I mean, as an aside, you might be worried that we don't have exactly the same, because that oscillator is complex, while here we were talking about the Hermitian matrix. That's true, but here we're going to restrict to modes that have a fixed angular momentum, so have J equal to 1. So perhaps a more precise way of making the connection would be to say that that we go to a new Hamiltonian, which so we start with the... So this is an aside. What I'm saying now is an aside, which... Sometimes ask about this. So, so we started with a Lagrangian or a Hamiltonian that contains this that has this form, right? And what we can do now is we can go to a new Hamiltonian, let's say H prime, which is the Hamiltonian that comes from Mr. Lagrangian, and we subtract J. Okay. So when we do that, so doing this is just simply adding a term here. So basically, see. Anyway, the term that is related to the current, and if you do this and then you redefine your fields in this fashion, so you'll see that. Well, then you will describe a system that... basically, you get rid of this term, and you get a system that describes a degree of freedom on a magnetic field. So it's the same as a particle moving on a plane with a constant magnetic field. And then restricting to states that have H prime equal to 0 is the same as restricting to the lowest Landau level. Okay. And so on the lowest Landau level, basically what you can forget about these terms in the Lagrangian and consider only the Lagrangian of this form. And this is, again, a single degree of freedom in quantum mechanics. And so you can apply the Parisi et al. Trick that reduces it to fermions. So you have fermions that move in phase space, and you directly get this picture. Okay. So this is x1 and x2, or phi1. Phi1 and phi2 are the two coordinates, which is due to... Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, that's more or less all I want to say about the field theory. So now we go over to the gravity description. So in gravity, we just first look for solutions that will be asymptotic to ADS5 process 5, but have this type of symmetry. Actually, one can classify all the solutions that have this type of symmetry, well, regardless of the asymptotics. One can start with, one can write a metric which has the form, well, dt minus v, where v is some one form, plus some three coordinates here, plus some R1 squared e omega 3. Call it like this. So these are two three spheres on which those SO4 groups will act. So that the fact that we have those SO4 groups implies that we'll need these spheres in the metric. And we also need a circle direction like this. So we have a metric of this form. And but this doesn't restrict the metric completely, and we need to impose the condition of the condition that we preserve the 16 supercharges. So by adding the condition that we preserve the 16 supercharges, we can determine the metric a little more precisely, and we find that these three coordinates, we can write them as in this way. And then there will be some functions here. So there will be some different functions that appear here in front, and one can determine also these functions. And all the functions that appear here in this ansatz, they are all determined in terms of a single function, C, that obeys a simple equation, which it basically looks like a Laplace equation. It's roughly of this form. So it basically looks like a Laplace equation for C. So it's a linear equation for a variable. And then you determine all these functions. All these functions appearing here are functions of C. Okay? They are non-linear functions of C, but some specific ones. And in addition, you have the property that the product of the two radii, so this R and R tilde that we defined before, is equal to Y. So so this Y is a special coordinate because it's telling us that it is proportional to the value of these two radii. So when Y is non-zero, so this space, these two radii are non-zero, everything is fine. But when Y goes to zero, one of these two radii, or both of them, are going to zero size. Okay? And in principle, if you just picked an arbitrary solution for C, so an arbitrary reasonable solution for C, the solution will be singular unless you impose certain conditions at Y equal to zero. Okay? Now, the conditions you need to impose at Y equal to zero are, in order for the solution to be regular, are that this function C should be equal to plus or minus a half at Y equal to zero. So this will ensure, so for this you need to know the details of the metric that I'm not giving you, but when this happens, either, so when, for the plus sign, one of these radii is going to zero, and what happens is that these three dimensions together with the y direction look like the origin of R4. So this S3 is shrinking in a smooth way. And for the other sign, it's the second S3 that is shrinking. Okay? Good. So that's the form of the Grady solution. So now what we see is that the Grady solution is completely specified by saying where we have one or the other boundary condition. So at Y equal to zero, so now we can think of this. So we have the coordinates X1 and X2, and we can think of this picture as the Y equal to zero plane, where these regions will be the regions where C is equal to 1/2, and these regions will be the regions where C is equal to minus 1/2. Okay? And we can choose the boundary between the two regions in an arbitrary way. So we can have different shapes here. If you choose a circle, then the solution you get by solving these equations is just ADS 5 cross S5. If you choose different shapes here, it will be it will differ from it by the addition of some 1/2 BPS excitations.
So the solution of the graph theory is restricted by the area being n.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get into that. That's a flux quantization condition. So, okay, maybe I just explain it now. So if you have some region shaded in one particular way, what this means is that when this is shaded, there is some S3 here that is shrinking, and the other S3 is shrinking here. So you can form a 5-cycle by taking a little 2-cycle, which is like a little cup that goes outside the blackboard. So there's the Y direction that is going outside the blackboard. You take a little cup here, and you tensor it with the sphere that is shrinking here on this side. Okay, so that defines a smooth 5-cycle. And through this smooth 5-cycle, you have some flux. And that flux is proportional, due to the special form of the ansatz, to the area of this surface here. And so this area is the number of brains. You can think of this as the number of D3 brains. So you can think of this, if you think of this as fermions, these D3 brains are wrapping the S3 that is shrinking in this region. Okay. So what happens is that you wrap the S3, you think of this morally as D3 brains that are wrapping the S3 that is shrinking is in this region, and the S3 is shrinking because not ordinarily when you have the brains wrapping on this S3 here, when you go to the ADS5 picture, you know that this S3 is contractible. And this is this discussion of geometric transition that Kumbrum emphasized, that whenever in the Grady solutions you typically have these transitions where especially when you have theories with mass gaps, when you wrap the cycle in which the brain is wrapped shrinks to zero size, and then some transfer cycle is not shrinking. Okay. Now, let me discuss some special simple excitations. So, if you start with the ADS5 cross S5 solution, and you make small ripples here, these small ripples correspond to particles that move in ADS, that or waves moving in ADS, linearized waves, that correspond to the operators in the field theory of the form trace C to the J, etc. So these are just simply one half EPS, let's say, gravitons. It's really a mixture of gravitons and other fields, but let's say morally they are gravitons that move in that space-time geometry. And then if you consider an excitation where you take a single fermion and you move it far away from the Fermi C, then this becomes the so-called giant gravitons, which are a D3 brain that, in this case, it would wrap the F3 inside ADS. Okay, and this agrees with what I was saying before, which is that so these D3 brains are wrapping this F3, which ends up being in ADS, which is contractible. And so here, when you take one of these fermions far away, you see this a little more explicitly, that you have an actual brain in ADS that is wrapping. So I should emphasize that what I've been talking about, having some brains here, but really these solutions have no brains in no case. So even so, if you put just a little tiny area of order one here, formally from the point of view of the gravity solution, you would have a smooth geometry. However, the curvature of the solution close to this region will be higher than the Planck scale. Okay, so the curvature will be low compared to the Planck scale when these areas are all very big and the distances between them are large enough.
Should one think of that picture as actually there's a little spike connecting it to the surface?
No, I don't think so. The precise way to think about it is to say from the field theory description is to have just a single eigenvalue that's moved out. From the gravity description, the best description is to think of it as a brain in the previous geometry. Yeah.
So you said that actually there are no brains, strictly speaking, but you cannot put a...
Yes.
Just try to embed the brain and found some condition to preserve supersymmetry of the embedded equation.
Well, you could do that, and then you'll find that you can embed these types of brains. You can do that, but the same brain formally can be... this is why I said formally... can be thought of as a gravity solution with curvature higher than Planck scale. You see, what's happening is that when you consider this giant graviton is some brain that wraps the S3. Okay, but when you start approaching this brain, these solutions are taking into account the back reaction. Let me, instead of putting one brain, put many brains, so that my discussion is actually precise. So here, you think of this as some brains that move in ADS, but when you approach these brains, there is some back reaction due to these brains, and then when you get very close to these brains, these are similar to the brains you started with. It's similar, except that n will be different, in the sense that they are wrapping some S3. So when you start approaching, you find that the S3 shrinks smoothly, and you have no sense in which you have a singularity in the geometry. Okay, you have a smooth geometry. So that description is correct as long as the number of fermions you have here is large. If it is just only one, you could say formally you could say it, but the more appropriate description would be to talk about brains in the background geometry. That's the best approximation.
So in general, these regions of z equal minus half and z equal plus half, you can have as many disconnected regions as you want.
Yeah, as many as you want. Yeah.
So the notion of this potential disappeared in the discussion. Somehow you had this potential in the harmonic oscillator to prepare the origin.
Right.
But that's now out of the discussion.
Yeah, it's out of the discussion because what we essentially have done is to define a new Hamiltonian, which is this one, right? We're essentially looking at the problem from the point of view of the lowest Landau levels. So when you have, the origin becomes preferred again if you think about the old Hamiltonian, which is the same as thinking about the generator J, right? So on these states, the old Hamiltonian is the same as J, and that's the rotation generator. So there's one state that has the minimum value of J, and then there are some states that have higher values of J.
And does anything special happen if you consider symmetric droplets or periodic arrays?
Yes. So there is, something special happens. Before I consider that, I'm going to answer your question in 1 minute. So another thing you could consider is to make a little hole here. A little hole here would be a giant graviton that is wrapping an S3 inside S5. Okay, it's the S3 on which the second SO4 group was acting. Now this S3 can start getting bigger, and as it gets bigger, the angular momentum becomes bigger, but it cannot get bigger than the size of the S5. And that corresponds to the fact that this droplet goes to the center here. Okay. Now, the configuration. So this configuration that contains the giant gravitons, they all contain. They're all configurations which have some angular dependence. So they have some dependence on the angle associated to J. So they are brains that are moving along the sphere or in ADS. Well, they are fixed. They are on some sphere in ADS, but they are moving in the phi direction of S5 that is dual to J. So this is this phi direction. So, however, this one here in the center is special because it's actually invariant under translations on this phi. Okay, and so that's what's special about configurations that are symmetric in this picture. So they are invariant under translations in phi. So they are formally rotational invariant, but they still carry angular momentum. Okay. So, for example, you could put many of them, and then you'll get the configuration like a ring, and then this is what gives you the back reaction of what happens when you put many of these D3 brains on this S5, for example. Okay. Okay. So that's let's see. Okay. Let me now make one philosophical remark. I should mention that finding the solutions is very simple because the questions are just linear. So once you solve the question for ADS, finding the equation with a hole here is just the superposition of two of them. So it's very simple to write down explicitly the solutions. Okay.
It's not Laplacian on S3, that equation.
No, that equation, I erased it. You can think of it as the Laplacian on R6. I didn't want to say this because it might be confusing, but it's the same as saying that you have the Laplacian on R6 with SO4 rotational symmetry, and Y is the direction, radial direction in those four dimensions. Okay, so X1 and X2 are two of the directions, and then, but this R6 is not in the geometry in any way, so. So this SO4 is not any of these two SO4s, as far as I know. So this point of view is not particularly useful to think about it. Though it might be particularly useful to write down the solutions. The remark I wanted to say is the following, that all this... Well, first one observation, which is that... solution, the topology of the solution in 10 dimensions ends up being the same as the topology of these droplets in the two-dimensional plane, in this special two-dimensional plane that completely specifies the solution. So, for example, this solution will have a different topology than the ADS5 cross S5 solution. So when you consider, for example, let's consider a region. So we have this Fermi C, and let's consider small excitations like this, right? So this you can think of this as a small topological excitation of some underlying background, and if this is just a single fermion that is very close to the Fermi C, this will be a topological excitation whose curvature is smaller than the Planck scale. Okay. Now, when you are doing the path integral from the gravity point of view, you might think that, well, you need to sum over all topologies, and that you will need some prescription for how to deal with the topologies that have curvatures smaller than the Planck scale. Okay. Now, here we have a dual prescription. We have some prescription on how to deal with this. And this is just saying, well, that these are some fermions and so on.
You mean smaller or larger? I'm confused.
What did I say?
You said smaller there.
Oh, I meant curvature larger than the Planck scale. Yeah, radius. Yeah, I sometimes confuse the radius of curvature with curvature. Yeah. So here we have a prescription which is in terms of the fermions. Now, this fermion description, one of the things it's telling us is that when we have a fermion very close to the Fermi C, we can equivalently think in terms of the boson. Okay. So if we do the quantum mechanics of these fermions, that's the same as the quantum mechanics of the boson. This is just ordinary bosonization. So where this boson is the change of the shape of this Fermi C. Okay. So if we quantize everything, all the things, basically what boson fermion equivalence is saying is that if we quantize all these different fluctuations of the shape of the Fermi C, we are also describing things where we have the fermion, if you wish, disconnected from the Fermi C. Okay. So these two are not. So once we quantize all the fluctuations of this type, we already included things where the fermions is separated that we might have thought are different topologies. Okay. So in some sense, these topologies with curvature smaller than the Planck scale, curvature larger than the Planck scale, are already included when we do the sum over gravitons. Because remember that I said that these bosons were the same as considering gravitons on the original geometry. Okay. So you shouldn't sum them twice. They are already included. Now, this is something that you can see very clearly in this 1/2 EPS discussion. The role and the effects of these fluctuations that have small topology changes on scales smaller than the on scales distance scales smaller than the Planck scale is something that is not completely well understood in quantum gravity, how to think about this. People discuss this in the context of wormholes and so on. So here's a context where we don't have wormholes, but we have these small topological fluctuations, and they're already included. So, yeah.
Is there any possibility that this could be related to the discussion that we've developed here in the last couple of years of topological strings and the crystal?
I think it's probably intimately related, and some of the things are very similar. The details are slightly different, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is a more concrete connection, because,
So you have to stay longer and work it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure if I explain Kuhnrum a little more how this works, he'll immediately... okay.
Do the big fluctuations also include in this? Why do you have to distinguish small versus big?
Well, okay, so I distinguish them. Well, in principle, if you think about the nonlinear theory, I wanted to... Here, if you consider big excitations, big fluctuations, this boson is is an interacting boson, it's a more complicated object. It's understood. In the matrix model literature, people have understood several aspects of this, but... and then you would describe everything in terms of the solutions of this nonlinear theory.
In other words,
the proper quantization of that nonlinear theory would be the fermions. Yeah.
Right, so in other words, all these different functions which add up to n are indistinguishable as a given theory, if I understand correctly.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fluctuations there's just one theory.
Yeah. And that's clear from the fermion point of view. Now, there is one context in which this is even simpler.
Yeah. You said you don't... consider the inverted potential.
Yes.
So the
potential here. Okay, maybe I'll. I started the discussion with the potential because, well, it's harmonic oscillator is something people. That is a little easier to visualize. I could have started the discussion with the lowest Landau levels, and then I would have never mentioned the potential, and that perhaps would have been a slightly more logical place to start. Because in the end, in this great discussion, that's closer to what we have. So these two coordinates are more or less on equal footing. Now the difference with the inverted. So here there is some natural generator, which is this J, which rotates this system. Okay. Now you are asking, well, why can't I just consider a situation where I can feel anything, right? So why don't I just feel this hyperbola and so on, right? And so that I can obtain something similar to the C equal to 1 matrix model. You could do this, but the problem is that you don't have a natural generator that performs the boosts in these directions. Okay, you still have this rotation generator. You have to figure out what the asymptotics of this space is, and people have considered that. So Harava and other people have considered that, but you don't have a natural generator in that field theory that performs boosts in this direction. And the ansatz is not invariant under boosts in this direction. Remember that these were two Euclidean directions. So the ansatz we've written before. So this configuration looks invariant under boosts. But when you put it back in the ansatz I just mentioned before, so where you have dx1 squared plus dx2 squared times some functions, right? This piece is not invariant under boosts. So it's not.
So it's some kind of a weak rotation. Yeah,
perhaps you could do a weak rotation here. You played a little bit around with it, and if you start doing weak rotations here, you cannot really make everything real in the metric. That's what we found. But there might still be some way. That's something we missed there. So
that would have been an extra time. It would be 8.2.
Well, you would have. Well, that might be one way to think. Well, we didn't go into this direction. We just were restricting to theories with one time. So what we're trying to do is make a weak rotation of this and a weak rotation of the other time. Weak rotations is some other. Yeah. So we couldn't get something that where this would be a sensible ground state, and then we would expand around. But it might be possible. So one idea people had is, well, if you instead of considering S3 here, you somehow consider H3 or something like that. Then you would have the opposite potential. But it didn't quite work. But it might still work in some way. I'm not sure.
So this solution corresponds to your BGS space, right?
Yeah.
Is it known how to describe non-pure space?
Well, of course. You can any non-BPS fluctuations of any of these geometries is a non-BPS state. Right?
No, BPS, some non-pure state, which is a combination of BPS states.
Pure states.
Some state which is described by this.
Oh, I see. I don't know if they have a simple gravitational description. Of course, once you identify the states this way, you can just consider two separate gravity solutions and somehow mix them, but it's not. There isn't something like the black hole that connects the two. Perhaps that's maybe what you're getting. You perhaps are wanting to ask whether there is, within these states, there is some black hole that somehow counts these states and so on. The answer is no. There are no black holes that are charged under this charge and preserve the 1/2. Well, but yeah, that's right. But that would be a simple example of something which is not just a sum of two disconnected geometries, but it's a geometry that actually represents this density matrix in a sort of very clear way. And so that's we don't have that. And presumably, if you consider the more complicated situations that preserve less supersymmetry, it might be possible to consider both of these things. So having some microstate description and at the same time having some special geometries that represent these other mixed states. Well, now there are many other things one can do with these solutions. Let me first discuss one point that is related to a point that Kumrun asked about. So one can take a... If one focuses on a small region here, that looks like filling sort of the lower half of the Fermi C. And now the fermion looks like a relativistic fermion, and the bosonization formula now is exact and linear, and so the theory is actually linear, and it's easier to describe all the excitations. So in this theory, is much. So any excitation is already described by this, and this is just ordinary relativistic bosonization. What this corresponds to is to a plane wave. So it's you start with a plane wave, the ten-dimensional maximally supersymmetric plane wave. That's the state that you only feel. That's the ground state for the fermions, and then these excitations are particles that BPS states on that plane wave. Okay. So that's one point. Now, okay, so you can repeat this story in M-theory. So in M-theory, it's basically the same. Morally, it's essentially the same. There are a few minor differences. So the symmetry groups are different. Now, again, you consider one-half BPS states that are carry angular momentum on the sphere and so on. Now I'm thinking about radius 4. Or any of these two situations, and the symmetry is just... So it's a slightly different symmetry group, so you can see how they arise and so on. It's all this that discussion is very simple. They're very similar. One thing we don't have is the analog of this matrix model discussion, because we don't have a simple description for those theories. So in that sense, it's not so nice. And from the gravity point of view, what we have is we don't have a linear equation, but we have a nonlinear equation. So, but we have the same. Philosophically, the same type of problem. There is again a y direction, and there is again a y equal to zero plane, where there are regions where you obey one kind of boundary conditions and regions with the other kind of boundary conditions. Now, some special. So, in this second paper, what we are doing is we are studying some special configurations, which are x1 translation invariant, and so. In these configurations, for example, you can take a region. So these two types of boundary conditions you can think of as arising from M2 or M5 range. So if you have M5 on DS5 here and the line S5, or here this and on line S2. So this is associated to an S2 and this is associated to an S5. In the same way that before we had two S3s, now we have an S2 and an S5. And these two regions are like, you can think of them as arising from M2s on S2 or M5s on S5. And in these cases, if you can compactify this direction, and then you can go to type 2A theory, and they describe sort of interesting configurations in type 2A theory for theories that are interesting on their own right. So let me now describe those theories a little bit. They are theories which are closely related to n equal to 4 super Yamels. So let's see, what's the easiest way to start? Okay. So let me first describe one theory one is interested in the type 2A. So you can consider the theory living on n d0 brains, and this is sort of an interesting quantum mechanical theory you all probably have, you know. I shouldn't explain. Yeah, probably shouldn't explain what it is. But
sure.
What?
It's fine. You have time.
No, I don't have time to. this is just the theory living on. If I didn't explain where n equal to 4 Yamels came from, I think I'm excused from. So it's the theory living on n d0 brains in 10 dimensions. So it's a theory that contains 9 scalars, x1 up to x3, and then x4 up to x9. So there are 6 plus 3. They're all equivalent. There's an SO9 invariance, but I'm in a second going to break it, so I separated them. And then we have some fermions. It has 16 supersymmetries. And they have... So if you try to analyze this theory as a simple example of, for example, ADS-CFT, one of the features of this theory is that it has a moduli space where the axis can be diagonal and you can separate the axis, and it costs no energy to separate the axis. And if you consider sort of any finite energy excitation, it will decay into configurations where all these axes are separated and are moving away. So that's slightly difficult. Well, if you're interested just in studying an example of ADS-CFT with a simple mask gap, that would be the simplest situation. So a simple situation would be to have a nice mask gap. So there is actually the formation of this theory that preserves the 16 supersymmetries, which is to add some special mass term that gives a mass to these scalars. It gives mass 1 to these ones and mass 2. So m equal to 1 to this one and m equal to 2 to this one in some units, and so on. So this is a simple perturbation we can do of this theory. This perturbation just removes all these branches with all these other branches, and it leaves us with a quantum mechanical system with a finite number of ground states. So, and it is, if you wish, a very simple example of ADS-FT, because we have a simple quantum mechanical theory. So there's no field theory or anything strange. It's just a simple quantum mechanical theory. It doesn't have all these other branches. It just has a mass gap. So, and for this reason, it's a theory that is interesting to study. Now, there's another reason that it's a theory that is interesting to study. So the second reason is that, it's the DLCQ theory of the M-theory plane wave. And that's another reason. And then the third reason is that it's a simple truncation of n equal to 4 Young Mills. So if you take n equal to 4 Young Mills on R cross S3, and you restrict to states that are invariant under a certain SU2 group that is embedded in SO4, this SO4 is the one that rotates this S3 here. So it's the SO4 inside SO2,4, so the one in IDS. So if you start with n equal to 4 Young Mills here, and you truncate to all states that are invariant under this SU2 left, you are left with a theory, which is this theory I've been discussing here. Okay. So these six scalars are the zero modes on S3 of the six scalars that we discussed here. And these three scalars here arise from some Kaluza-Klein modes of the gauge field on S3. Okay. So, for example, if you are interested in studying spin chains and things like that, which are made purely with excitations from S5, the type of excitations you build in this theory and that theory are very similar. And in fact, the one-loop dilation operator is exactly the same in the two theories for excitations of this type.
Are these dual in any sense, or just happens to be the same?
I'm not sure. There might be some very I don't know any sense in which they are dual. What they are is they are a truncation of one to the other. So here you make a truncation, but then when you do the quantum mechanics, they are really different theories. it might be that, yeah, well, let's leave it there. So here, the different dynamics, so when you start considering the dynamics, not the one-loop correction, but the two-loop correction and so on, that will be different in the two theories. And that's because you start having loops of these other fields, which are different in the two theories. For example, one of the differences between the two theories is that n equal to 4 has a unique ground state, while this other theory has many ground states. And these different ground states are... when you analyze the ground states of this theory, you find that it has you can set the energy equal to zero by picking configurations of these three matrices, where these three matrices I, where I runs from 1 to 3, are different representations of SU2. So you have these so-called fuzzy sphere constructions. What happens is the D0 brains grow into fuzzy spheres, fuzzy S2s, and these are all different vacua. And you have a large number of vacua. You have of the order of partitions of n of vacua, exactly partitions of n, so which is a large number of vacua. Okay, so I describe so far this field theory. So the gravity solutions are going to be given by the following configurations. So you take these translation invariant configurations, and you put some excitations in such a way that the total excitation energy here is of the order of the number of the zero brains. But then you can arrange these excitations in many different ways. So you can have, for example, this, or you can have a situation where you have, let's say, with the same energy, some hole here, or you can excite this. So these type of excitations, these correspond to, if this is very thin and very far away from here, this looks like a configuration where the ND zero brains have formed a big D2 brain. Okay, so they blow up into a big D2 brain. And on the other hand, this type of configuration corresponds to the case where the D0 brains have blown up into an NS5 brain. Okay. So, and by thinking a bit more about these crazy solutions, I'm probably going to discuss it a little more in a second, you can actually see that there is this 5 brain in the geometry. So people have often wondered, well, where is, in a slightly different context, in the context of the D0 brain, when thinking about the DLCQ of M theory, they've been trying to build the NS5 brain, so-called transverse NS5 brain, so an NS5 brain that is transverse to the DLCQ direction. And so here you can see it very easily emerging from this discussion. You can see it clearly in the geometry. And you identify it with the vacuum, with this type of vacuum. Perhaps what I could say a little more about, there is a, you can make a more precise correspondence between, in the same way that we make this correspondence between different shapes of the Fermi C and the different vacua, you can make this different this correspondence between the different representations of SU2 that we choose here to these different vacua. Okay, so now let me tell you a little more how these solutions are found. So this actually, when you consider a translation invariant configuration for that equation that I wrote before, you can make a change of variables and transform that equation into a linear equation. Perhaps I should reproduce the equation. Well, anyway, are you interested in the change of variables? Probably. Well, we have now a translational invariant configuration in direction 2, so the equation becomes this. And the change of variables is the following. You define a new variable, which is e to the d, and then you define a potential v, which gives you the other variable in this way, and gives you this other variable in this other fashion. And then things are consistent with this equation if this function v obeys the axially symmetric Laplace equation in three dimensions. So now this is a simple Laplace equation in three dimensions. Eta is like the C coordinate, and rho labels a coordinate on a two-dimensional plane. And the angle here on this plane doesn't mean anything, but... okay, so the nonlinear problem got transformed into a linear problem. And all one needs to figure out is how these boundary conditions of the original problem transform into boundary conditions of this new problem. And the final result is that in this new problem, what you have is you have the three-dimensional space, and then you have a configuration of disks. So these are some disks that are conducting that... Okay, so the three-dimensional Laplace equation looks like a problem in electrostatics, right? That's the problem we solve when we look for the electric potential due to some charges in three dimensions. And the boundary conditions that come from this discussion are the boundary conditions that would arise if we had conducting disks that are axially symmetric, okay? So we have a certain number of conducting disks. If we are interested in these type of configurations, what we have is at eta equal to zero, we have an infinite conducting plane, and then we have some conducting disks on top of that. And so all the different vacua of the theory correspond to all the different arrangements of conducting disks that we can have. And now this in the previous discussion, we said that the area of droplets corresponded to the charge, was related to the charge and fluxes in the geometry. Here, in this context, what happens is the charge on this disk, so the charge on the disk is equal to the number of two brains or the corresponding flux. So properly speaking, one should say it's the flux of the dual of F4, of the four-form field strength. And because, again, as before, there are no explicitly two brains anywhere, but there are the corresponding fluxes. And then the distance between these two points is the same as the N5 flux. So the flux that you can think of it as arising from NS5 rings, even though there are no NS5 rings in the geometry. Okay, so that's this description.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You said you didn't have clear connection with matrix models at CGF.
Yeah.
But this equation, this is the three-dimensional Toda equation.
Right.
This was also found by or studied by Kazakov and Kostov, Alexander.
Right.
Precisely in the context of matrix models.
Yeah.
Is there a possible link with that to do that to work? Or
well, hopefully there is. But the difference is that the boundary conditions, so they had the same equation. And the boundary condition, but the boundary conditions we are choosing for it are different than the ones they are choosing. I don't know how to translate in a simple way the two boundary conditions. Also, there is a connection between this the Toda equation and free fermions, but again, they don't seem to be the same as the free fermions that were appearing in the previous discussion, or free fermions that would be associated to droplets. As far as I understand, maybe there is some relationship. We tried for a while to do that, but we didn't get anywhere. Okay, so so in this discussion of
can there be other charges, or you're restricted by supersymmetries
2 and 5? Yeah, you're restricted by the supersymmetries to only these two fluxes. You well, plus of course the D0 charge. So yeah. But they are really connected. So the number of these zero brains is basically the dipole moment of this configuration. So if you take this configuration, if you look at this configuration from far away, you have a conducting disk. So you have an image charge of an image charge with the opposite sign, and so this configuration far away has a certain dipole moment, and that dipole moment is the D0 brain charge. So when you start varying here, what you should keep fixed is this total dipole moment. Well, it's already 1 hour. I could probably go on a little bit more.
How much more time do you
have? Well, I could go on for 15 more minutes and
okay,
then stop.
Okay, maybe take a 10-minute break and then you can go on.
Okay, yeah.